Habakkuk chapter 1, from verse 12 to chapter 2, verse 1. Habakkuk has complained to God. He has cried out to the Lord. Why? Because he has seen the appalling state of Judah, the utter declension in the spiritual life of his people. Israel has gone into captivity to Assyria, and he can see Judah here. Judah following the same course as her sister Israel. The law is paralyzed. Spiritual life is at a very low ebb. Conflict, strife, destruction, violence, injustice. I've cried out to you, Lord, he says. I've cried out to you. This is going on all the time, and you do not listen. How long, O Lord, must I call for help? And you, but you do not listen. Or cry out to you. Violence, but you do not save. And the Lord has answered him. But the answer is utterly different to what Habakkuk had hoped. Perhaps he'd feared that, like Israel, Judah would go into captivity. But no doubt he had hoped that God would send an awakening, a reviving, a quickening again for Judah. But it was not to be. I am raising up the Chaldeans, says God, the Babylonians, and they will sweep across Judah, and the pain and the grief will be appalling. That is God's answer to Habakkuk. As I've said many times in these discourses over the years now, I'm not interested in just giving historical lectures on what happened 2,000 years ago. These things are relevant for me as I look out upon the United Kingdom. Perhaps I'm wrong, but what I see is this. I see paganism with a Christian garb. I see big business with Christian slogans. That is what I see on one hand. On the other hand, I see an orthodoxy, but a dead orthodoxy in the main. A reliance, a return to creeds and confessions and the men of the past. I'm not deriding these creeds and confessions and men of the past. But we parrot sola scriptura, and we quote Acts 17:11, the Bereans were more noble that they searched the scriptures daily, but whenever I discuss with these men, they go back to creeds and confessions and the so-called wisdom of the church. Perhaps I'm sweeping. There are, of course, the faithful laborers who are seeking to spread the gospel, but so many of them, I fear, have to make the same complaint as me. I have so much and reap little. Lord, who has believed our preaching? Who has believed our message? And Habakkuk has spoken to me. He has challenged me. He not only preached about it and complained to men about it and discussed it, he has cried out to God. And I appeal to all who are hearing me, who feel the same as I do, that the state in the United Kingdom, and perhaps in the States and in the West in general, is such that we have to cry out like Habakkuk to God. Perhaps you feel the same rebuke as I do, and challenged by Habakkuk's approach to God. Of course, we long for revival. We love for quickening. A moving of the Spirit among us, yes. But who knows? And I fear, my friend, I fear. I am no prophet, but I fear that it's judgment for us. And therefore Habakkuk's book, and Habakkuk's prophecy, Habakkuk's burden, is so relevant to me. Now in this discourse now, it's Habakkuk returns to God in complaint. I note first of all in verse 12, where he starts, O Lord, are you not from everlasting? My God, my Holy One, we will not die. O Lord, you have appointed them to execute judgment. O Rock, you have ordained them to punish. He lays down some substantial truths. The God is the Lord, the great Jehovah, the great I Am, the great Sovereign One. He is the everlasting God. These events come and go. These tides ebb and flow. But God remains everlastingly the same. He is my God, my Holy One, the personal God. He is God. He is the Holy One. Not only sovereign, but absolutely holy in perfections. He is confident, this Habakkuk. We will not die. Oh, Judah may have to go into captivity, but the cause of God will rise and triumph. I am sure of that too. Like Spurgeon in the 1880s and 90s, although the cause of God he thought might go down for 50 or 100 years, he knew it would rise. God will have his work go on in the world. God is sovereign, says Habakkuk. O Lord, you have appointed them. It's not just allowing. It's not just circumstances. It's not just events. God is in sovereign control. O Rock, the substantial, solid, abiding, certain one, you have ordained them. But you've ordained them to punish. But that's what I must do, brother and sister. I must lay down these eternal principles. God, my God, our God, brother and sister, he is the sovereign, eternal, holy, everlasting one. He is the sovereign God who rules all things. God moves in a mysterious way his wonders to perform, but he does move. O Lord, you have ordained them. We can't understand always. Blind unbelief is sure to err and scan his works in vain. God is his own interpreter, and he will make it plain. But Habakkuk opens his heart to God, but he consoles himself with these substantial and abiding truths. Brother and sister, in your dilemmas today and difficulties, and looking out over this religious scene, shall we call it, let us take comfort, I want to take comfort, in the sovereignty, the holiness, the perfection, the everlastingness, the myness, the personal. God is my God, and he is the Rock, and we shall not die. We may have to go into judgment, but the cause of God will not die. It will not. But Habakkuk has two complaints here. One, God is sovereign. God is holy. So how can he who cannot tolerate wrong, verse 13, why then do you tolerate the treacherous? Why are you silent when the wicked, while the wicked swallow up those more righteous than themselves? God cannot tolerate evil and wrong and sin. Okay, he sees it in Judah. And he must punish it. I believe the same goes for the United Kingdom. Maybe for the West in general. But whom will he use? The Chaldeans. They're even more wicked. What if Islam should rise in our country? What if secularism should rise? What if materialism and atheism, so-called, should dominate? Why then do you tolerate the treacherous? You cannot abide it in Judah, but you seem to use the Chaldeans, the Babylonians, to do it. And the second complaint is, you have made men, he's speaking about Judah, like fish in the sea. And of course, Babylon was wreaking havoc throughout the known world at that time. Like sea creatures that have no ruler, these people, the wicked foe pulls all of them up with hooks. He catches them in his net. He gathers them up in his dragnet. And so he rejoices and is glad, and he sacrifices to his net, and he burns incense to his dragnet, because his net has brought him luxury, and he enjoys the choicest food by the power of his net. Is he to keep on emptying his net, destroying nations without mercy? His idolatry is encouraged by his success, and he boasts about his power and his prowess and his weapons. You cannot tolerate this in Judah, and yet you use it with the Chaldeans. These are my problems, says God, says Habakkuk, addressing God. These are my confusions. You are too holy to do this, and yet you're doing it. And yet the men you're using glory not in you, but in themselves and their weapons. You see, God answers our prayers, but in strange ways. John Newton said, I asked the Lord that I might grow in grace and so on. I really wanted to be spiritually minded, so I prayed to the Lord about it, and I thought this is how he would do it. But to my amazement, the way he answered my prayer was altogether strange and altogether different to what I had thought. We cry out for revival, brother and sister. But who knows? I fear it will be judgment. And what is Habakkuk's final response in this, at this time? I will stand on my watch, chapter 2, verse 1, and station myself on the ramparts. God had said, look, verse 5 in chapter 1, I will stand, he's determined, at my watch, and station myself on the ramparts. I will look to see what he will say to me. He is listening to God. He's crying out to God. I've no doubt he's preaching against it, what he sees. In the next verse or so, he's talking about writing it down. But he's praying, and he's watching for God's hand. And what answer I am to give to this complaint, or what I am to answer when I am rebuked. He recognizes that God might rebuke him. And therefore, he waits. God is sovereign. Habakkuk spreads his case before him, confident in the Lord. With all his internal doubts and fears, he spreads his case before the Lord. And he cries out, not only for his individual experience, but for the nation of Judah. My dear brother and sister, we have our personal concerns, and we spread them before the Lord. But let us also take up the cause of Christ in general where we live. I in the United Kingdom, where are you? In Australia, Japan, Russia, South America, Africa, America, where are you? Canada? Let us spread our situation and our circumstances before the Lord, whatever we see. And may we plead with God to arise and bless us. But as I've seen in Habakkuk, the answer may be very different to what we would long for. I'm just reading, and I finish reading the first half of Lamentations. What a commentary upon this book. The grief and sadness when judgment comes. May God have mercy upon us, brother and sister. An unbeliever, if Islam should rise, if paganism should rise, if the gospel should go out in the United Kingdom, you may think this would be a rejoicing time for you, but you will be in utter darkness then. You are perishing now. But at the moment you still can hear the gospel in England. What if the gospel light should be removed? Seek the Lord while he may be found, I call to you. That is now. Now is the time of salvation. Do not delay. Come now. Now is the day of salvation. Tomorrow may be too late. May God bless this passage of Habakkuk to our souls. Sinners to be awakened and alarmed and brought to Christ. Saints to cry out to God and wait patiently for him. And to do all we can to raise the standard of God's truth. To let the light shine in this dark world. May God bless us as a result of looking at the prophet Habakkuk.